If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Oh, hello. Welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And it's a podcast. We ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for all you guys. Hallie, how are you?
I'm good. I'm slowly dyeing my hair pink.
Yes. Walk us through the stage you're in.
Well,
I like it.
Thank you. I'm turning 40 this year, and I feel like if you're a lesbian over 40 or a queer woman over 40, you are obligated to either dye your hair. Like, you got to go full J.G. Cohen with it, I think.
I think so, too.
Or alternately, I don't know if she's considered herself straight, but straight. If you're going to be straight, I say go get a big wacky hat like Amy Sherman Palladino. You know what I mean?
That is also an option.
Big hat, dye in your hair. And I think it just
I'm leaning also, I have a few picked out, more stupid tattoos. So
I'm going to get a tattoo. I'll show you a photo.
Yes, please do.
Yes, I'm going to get it next month. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm not here to, nobody cares what I look like anymore. Does that make sense?
No,
I'm just like, I can just do whatever.
Not at all.
But also, again, if you're younger than us, and many of you probably are, the earlier you can realize that it doesn't matter, and it's so hard because everyone tells you that.
I know.
I know it matters for other people, but for me it matters. I got to do all this stuff. I understand that.
But there's something that shifted in me in the last, like, year or so.
Oh, yeah.
And perhaps the pandemic, like, accelerated it in a way that I maybe wouldn't have. And I'm like, I'm also, like, not dating at all, so I'm just like, who gives a shit? But I have felt a very, like, I thought I knew I didn't care, but now I'm like, oh no, now I actually don't care.
I feel the exact same way, and it's very strange, and I had to go to a lot of therapy for it, so it wasn't something that just happens. I'm sorry, everyone.
No.
If you're like, I should go to therapy, just go now. Go at 25.
Yeah, go now.
Knock this out by 30. Think of the things that you'll get to.
You'll
if you don't
so
hate
much
yourself.
Time.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just so much better, so much mental energy.
I know.
So I'm going to get something. It's sort of a variation on this. I'll shout out the tattoo artist. His name is Nick Brule. He's at Parlor 6 Tattooing in Tustin, California, in Orange County. And it's sort of a skull with sort of a cartoony flower coming out of it.
I like that. That feels very you.
Thank you.
Splitting the difference of the two sides of who you are.
That's
really
it.
Goofy and silly, but also obsessed with all things horrifically morbid.
thank you. That's how I feel about it. Allison, how are you doing?
I'm good. A couple weeks ago, I stayed in on a Saturday night and took an edible and was just, like, very stoned and ordered a ton of, like, apartment organizational things.
Great, good.
Mm-hmm. And, like, they've started coming, and I feel like I'm really, like, changing my life. You know, I really, like, I got, like, I haven't had a jewelry box in a really long time. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't, like, had an organization. Like, I've just had all my jewelry, like, loose in, like, little velvet pouches and Ziploc bags in a drawer that I don't open. Like, and I was
I've carried a fistful of jewelry from between the states my whole life. Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I don't wear most of my jewelry because it's, like, not accessible to me. And so, like, I got a jewelry box, and then I had to get a shelf to put the jewelry box on, and then I have a shoe rack that's on its way and some hooks to hang my towels from the pool up behind my door. Like, I'm really trying
to... It's all happening. It's all happening.
Yeah, got a bar cart to get all my liquor in one place and just really nesting, which is, like, such a January thing to be doing.
Yes, I love that. I actually have a new desk arriving.
Ooh.
I'll show you guys once I get my apartment, once I get my living room. Also, I realize when you see my apartment, you're going to be like, that seems about right.
Yeah.
Because it's gone in a very Pee Wee Herman direction. Not entirely under my control, but it's just happening.
These things happen.
But I also want to say that what you just described is an episode of 30 Rock where she goes to the Container Store.
Yes.
And she thinks my life will finally be perfect.
Everything.
Exactly.
And then it all, like, melts in a fire into one piece.
Hey, everybody, it's Hallie.
And Allison.
This is an ad for our February 25th live show. It'll, of course, be at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, as it always is.
And you can get your tickets, as you always do, at moment.co/ruin. That's moment.co/ruined. And come and join us as Hallie ruins
Human Centipede 3. We thought, look, it's Valentine's Day. Everyone's cozied up. Why not do something a little romantic?
Yes. And if you are eager to listen to the first two, we did cover them for Patreon. Human Centipede 1 and Human Centipede 2 are on the Patreon. So you can subscribe to the tier where you get the extra episodes. And if you want to, listen to those before Sunday, February 25th, when we ruin Human Centipede 3 live.
Though I'm not going to lie, you probably could piece it together. If you just had a start on 3, I think you'd be able to put the pieces parts. But either way, please join us on the 25th, and you could go get tickets at moment.co/ruined, and we'll see you there.
See you there. Seamless segue plug. If you are not a Patreon member, we just put a bunch of videos onto Patreon that had not been there. We had some seeming tech issues with uploading
video. For months.
And it's like, all right, well, we finally got it dealt with. But we have the last like 4 ruined live shows that if you didn't get to go see those, they're all up now. So I don't know. I think it's the $20 tier, which we understand is, of course, not nothing. So I don't know. I'm not telling you to like join and quit. But if you're not in that tier, just join for a month and watch all of those because we got really good, like Tusk, Scream 6, Megan with Naomi Akparagan, which, I mean, I want to watch and have not been able to. So,
Knock at the Cabin. Did you ever see that one?
Yes.
Which I'm still mad about. And please join us. We got a ton of old episodes. And we're going to keep them coming, like this episode right now. Another flawless segue.
I mean, look at us, just doing the business.
So this is, we're continuing cold month.
Yes.
It is, of course, stunning here in Los Angeles, California. I don't even have socks on in my own home, which for here is like, you know, it's getting warmer.
Yeah, that's something.
How are things in New York?
Today it's like, it was raining earlier and now it's just kind of like warm-ish, like high 40s and cloudy. And I'm like, I'll take it.
I do miss New York.
Like
weather.
To put on like a mid-weight coat and go for a walk. That's nice.
Just heaven. Well, in this movie, I guess you could walk for a whole goddamn month if you wanted to. That's right. We're doing 30 Days of Night. I don't know if he's listening to this episode, but I always associate this movie with my friend Will. A friend of his was like, oh, I want to show you just over their house or whatever, show you a documentary about Barrow, Alaska, where they have 30 days of night. They have a full month of night. Pitching it as a documentary. And my friend was like, yeah, okay, that seems fine. And it's funny because the very beginning, like the opening shot, and I will talk about like why, it does have the sense of like, oh, we're setting up like, oh, interesting. And also it's like, I would absolutely watch that documentary about that town. That's really interesting.
100%.
In the end, of course, it is a vampire movie and my friend was horrified. But it is, of course, came out in 2007. It is based on the comic book of the same name and is directed by David Slade. And it is written by Steve Niles, Stuart Beatty, and Brian Nelson. And let's see what else. David Slade. What else has he done? Oh, he did Hard Candy. Oh my God!
Oh, amazing.
Okay. Loved that film. If you want, go listen to Hard Candy. We've already done that for the pod.
Yes.
Done a ton of incredible television, but Hard Candy again, one in a million. We always like to have Allison watch the trailer for the movie. So Allison, what did you think of the trailer for 30 Days of Night?
Well, I am now watching True Detective Night Country, which is, of course, kind of the same world, which is the above the Arctic Circle part of Alaska that does have no sunlight for a full month. And so it's like about solving a crime that happens during that phase. So it's like dark the whole time, which I'm loving it. Only 2 episodes are out when we're recording this.
I need to follow up on it.
I think you would enjoy it. It's not horror, but like there's definite horror elements present. And I got the same vibe from, you know, it's just like, oh, like weird things happen when it's dark all day, every single day. I didn't like the long nail record scratch that I saw. I didn't like that at all.
Long, wet, filthy nails scraping at everything. It's not one thing that doesn't get scraped with a filthy nail in this movie. And we also take a baseline scary. Allison, what do you think about how scary do you find the concept of vampires in the snow?
I mean, I feel like of all of the kind of like monsters, they're the most prepared for it because they wear kind of like long coats.
They have layers. That's a really good point.
They layer. They have capes.
Now, what's a monster that wouldn't be prepared for the snow, you think?
Frankenstein's just in a sports jacket.
Right. You know? That's a really good point. Like,
he's not really ready. He's kind of more of a fall monster.
Right. He's got the one jacket. He's like, I guess I'll wear that.
He's like, this is it. But it's over a t-shirt. It's not even, you know.
Ooh, September for Frankenstein.
I know.
Ooh, the fall leaves coming down. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, he really, he's such a autumn boy. Yeah. I mean, I feel like a werewolf is good for snow.
I guess a mummy, but that's like a light layer. That seems more of a spring thing.
Very desert. Very desert chic.
Oh, there you go. Summer weather. And then Blue Lagoon, maybe that's spring. Maybe, you know, spring things are thawing. The monster from the Black Lagoon, sorry.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Wet stuff needs to be above 32 degrees. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Or that's easier to beat, I guess. Do you find it scary? Or is it just sort of like, it's no scarier than if they were just walking around?
I think the darkness brings it to be very scary because there's no moment where they're not hanging out. Because aren't they, like, allergic to the sun?
Yes. And that is, of course, the problem with the town that they're going to be invading is that it has 30 days of total night, which is a long time for a vampire to be out.
That's a long time. Yeah, they can get a lot done.
unfortunately.
I sometimes see, like, TikToks from this TikTok account of this woman who lives, I believe she's in, you know, Norway or, like, a Scandinavian country way, way, way up at the top. So, like, it also is, like, dark. Or maybe she's in Greenland or something. But it's
we'll never know.
Her name is like Silka, and she's like, "Oh, hello! It's noon here, and it's like pitch dark." She's like, "Time to go for a walk." And it's just like this very like delightful version of
I love that
life when it's dark for long periods of time. But like she's so like cheerful, but like she'll be like, "Well, we don't have plants anymore," and like it's just this like very strange juxtaposition.
I know it's like you would get used to it, obviously, or if you're raised in it. But like thinking about that, I'm like, I would be. Let's just say out in the shed. You know what I mean? I'd be just fumbling around for something. You know what I mean?
The whole time.
It would not be good.
No.
Also, I wanted to add before we started that this movie, when it came out in 2007, the name of the town is Barrow. And in 2006, the town actually voted to change its name to, and I'm going to try to pronounce it tonight. You know I apologize.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But it's Utqaiqvik.
Wow.
And
close.
Listen, it's literally written out in the Anchorage Daily News. It's written out for people like me to try to pronounce. And it is the local indigenous leaders. It's sort of the project of decolonialization. And I think that they're right to be like, well, we're the ones who live here. It stands to reason.
100%.
We don't have to use the name given to it by Roquefort McGuire. In 1853, and he was, of course, from the Irish Royal Navy and just came and said, we're going to call it Barrow. So I think in 2016, everyone said, hey, we don't have to do this. We're allowed to name our own place. So December 1st, 2016, it is now called, and again, I apologize to anyone who lives there or knows how this should be pronounced, Utqaiqvik. So shout out to that town. That's cool. I think that's beautiful.
Cool as hell.
And then finally, knowing what you know, which is very little, and mostly from the trailer, what do you think the twist is? Would you like to guess the twist in 30 Days of Night, Allison?
Guess the twist.
Would you say there's like a twist?
Yes. I would say at the ending, there is a decision made that I'm like, okay. I wouldn't have expected that to happen.
Okay, I'm going to guess that they don't kill all the vampires and keep some of them alive because there's, like, some kind of understanding that they're, like, important.
Okay, great. That's a really excellent
guess. It's like maybe they kill, like, a lot of them but, like, leave, like, one alive.
Okay, I love that. Okay, let us begin. Ruining 30 Days of Night. We open on what at the time was called Barrow, Alaska, and it's written text on the screen, and it's sort of like disappearing in and out of the snow. So again, it does feel like the beginning of a documentary. It's like lines of text, and we see it's the northernmost town in the United States. It's isolated in 80 miles of isolated wilderness. It's cut off every winter for 30 days. So when this town happens, when the 30 days happen, not only is it 30 days of night, they basically shut down the town. So there are no flights in and out because it's just dangerous.
Yeah.
They don't sell liquor, but you could, you could get liquor beforehand, you're allowed to drink it, but like the bars close. It's just like 30 days of everyone just like staying at home.
Staying home.
And like just making the town run. And then once the sun comes back, they start doing flights out in and out, you know. So it's sort of like just like you're used to. Title card, 30 Days of Night. We see a hollow-eyed man in a parka staring at a ship that is sort of run aground in the ice. Off the coast of Alaska. And that man is played by Ben Foster, who I always associate with dating Laura Dern. And he's great in this movie. He plays a real creep. And we see him looking at the ship. We could sort of assume who's arriving on it. And he takes a turn, and the stranger walks towards town. And we see him walking across miles of ice and snow. He is alone, and it's daylight, right?
Okay, so there is daylight now.
Yeah, so it's daylight now. It's the day before the month of night begins. So he finds himself, he's on the cliff overlooking Barrow. It's gorgeous. I mean, like, you see the horizon, stunning. And everyone is getting ready in the town. Basically, a lot of people leave for the month. So either they leave to go do a job, they leave to go visit family. The town kind of clears out.
Stay somewhere that has sunlight, you know.
Yes.
Stuff humans like doing, I guess.
Yeah, we see people getting ready. Like, someone's going to Portland, someone's going to Seattle, someone's going to go take their kids to visit their mother. Sort of like, oh, an opportunity to get the hell out of town.
Yeah.
Because if you stay, it's basically just you're going to sleep and you're, you know, working. We meet up with our protagonist, Eben Olsen, played by Josh Hartnett. It was to see him.
Great to see him, you know?
What a treat.
I know this isn't, like, recent or anything like that, but, like, it's just nice to see Josh Hartnett on screen.
Absolutely.
Great at horror.
And then his colleague and fellow officer, Billy Kitka. And we see them finding, in the snow outside town on that very cliff, a big mass of stolen satellite phones that have been thefted from the town, that have been melted down. Clearly, they were set on fire.
Okay.
And you're like, what the fuck is this? Like, obviously, if somebody stole a satellite phone, that makes sense. They're valuable up here. You could resell it. To destroy something that is extremely valuable, why would you do such a thing? Well, you would do it, Allison, if you were trying to cut off people's way of contacting people out of the town, right?
Yes.
And we look out, the sun is just hovering over the horizon, and Billy's talking about his wife. He's like, you know, I brought Peggy here on our first date. And Eben said, we all did. Not Peggy, but, you know, our everyone's first date in this town. You go up to the cliff, you see the sunset. It's beautiful. And as they drive back into town, we see the sun start to dip below the horizon, and they arrive at the Barrow, Alaska population sign, like on the outskirts of town. And Eben says, why even bother to do this? And Billy's like, no, it's a tradition. And he changes the population. In reality, this town has over 4,000 residents. But in the movie, he's switching it from 563 to 152. So over 400 people are leaving today. And there's a last flight that they're all getting on out of town. Or maybe there's multiple flights, but today everyone's leaving. 400 people are leaving town, and they'll come back in a month, basically. So we meet up with Stella, who is the fire marshal, and it's basically she's heading back out of town. She works for the Alaska Fire Department for the state and basically goes around to all these little towns and just make sure everything is up to date in their fire station.
Okay. Smart.
She also has the cuntiest blonde I've ever – like, I'm like, this is a – you just think this actual woman is, like – not getting her roots done every month. You know what I mean? Like, this is a – not that she wouldn't want to, but I'm like, her job is flying to remote Alaskan villagers. She might let the roots grow out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
She might be doing more of a highlight.
High maintenance hair color is not the most logical style for someone with her life.
But again, I did love that for her.
Oh,
I thought
it's
that
so
was
fun.
Very fun. I'm like, sure, why not? And Stella's played by Melissa George, who's in a ton of things. Oh, Mulholland Drive. There you have it.
There you go.
And she's sort of quickly finishing up. She's talking to the fire chief. And he said, oh, you headed out of town? And sort of talking to her. His name's Adam. And he's like, you know, why don't you just stay here for the month? It's kind of an opportunity to, like, come revisit the town after you left. And maybe while you're here, you could sort of tell us why you separated from Eben, because everyone wants to know what happened. Mm. And so apparently they broke up. She left to go work for the fire department. And everyone's like, why did they break up? You know, and to be fair, there's so few people there. If there was a divorce, you would want to know. It would be the talk of the town.
Yeah. I mean, small town, you have to be up in everyone's business.
I will also say everyone in this movie is like normal looking, attractive person, but like a character actor that would live in a small town in Alaska, like a beard or like a woman with like a bob who works at the diner.
It's not just a bunch of like 20-somethings with, like, flawless skin.
But then the main characters are Josh Hartnett and Melissa George, which is so funny. Like, they look, like, it's like, if that person was in your town, it's like, well, she's the mayor. She's the queen of the town. What are we going to do?
I mean, every single person would know who they are.
And then they also make sense. Like, if you knew that couple in that town, it's like, well, we are talking about you. You are celebrities to us.
Yes.
But she's like, nope, I am headed out of town. I'm not doing that. I'm also not seeing Eben, so don't even... Not like don't tell him, but like I'm out of town, so like don't bring it up until after I leave, right?
Right.
So we see everyone's packing up and everyone's heading to the airfield for last plane out of Dodge. Allison, unfortunately, we see someone sneak up to a corral of sled dogs and stab them. And we see this figure, we don't see their face, sort of systematically murdering all the sled dogs in town. I'm sorry to tell you this.
That seems unnecessary. Just let them go at least.
Well, the reason they're doing is they got rid of the cell phones, and now they don't want the dogs alerting anybody or perhaps attacking or defending anybody, right? So they're trying to get rid of the things that would prevent perhaps a group of arrivers, some tourists, from showing up and taking over the town. Mm. Eben sees Bo, who's the town's snow plow operator. He cites him for leaking oil all over the street. And Bo's like, oh, my God, isn't that why we live up here? Is like there aren't laws or rules? And he was like, I'm a police officer. I don't agree with you, on this. But he gets back in the car and Eben says, and Billy says, you know, you didn't have to give him a ticket. Like, it was just a mistake. And Eben says he lives all alone on the South Ridge. A citation now again reminds him he's part of a community. It's like, do you think that guy has money? Like, what are you talking about?
What are you doing?
Just invite him to go get coffee. Like, if you're worried about community.
It doesn't have to be all,
Why, invite him to your church or whatever, up there, you know? Allison, they get a call from Helen at dispatch. She tells him something bad has happened to John Reese's dogs. So this is the first flag of the dogs being killed. We see Stella is speeding to the airfield to get the last plane when she is T-boned by a giant piece of construction machinery that I'm going to call a thresher. I don't know if that's what it's called, but I don't know machines. And so I'm going to refer to it as a thresher.
This is not a machines podcast.
And
the fact that you said that is already impressive to me.
And it was scary. She's T-bone. And then the driver pops out, Malachi, who is indigenous. And he's like, I'm so sorry. I started to skid and the brakes locked up. And knows Stella, obviously, is from town. And it's like, I'm so sorry. And she says, it's fine. I said, I'm probably going to miss the flight. So she has to call the only other person who's like, I know he has a car. She calls Eben to be like, I'm in town. I didn't tell you. I'm leaving. Please come pick me up from this wreck and take me to the plane.
Also, like, missing that flight sucks.
Right. Yeah.
30 days. That's not like, ugh, I hope there's another one later. It's like, this is it.
Yeah. And Eben's like, you were in town and you weren't going to tell me. And she's like, can we talk about this on the drive? Like, I knew you were going to be. This is why I didn't tell you. But instead, he tells Billy to go pick her up. He's like, I'm not dealing with you. And also, I have to go find out who's murdering all the dogs. So that's a big question. I know. Eben tells Stella, let me know if the day comes when you actually want to talk, and then hangs up on her. Okay. So clearly, you know, they have yet to—
Things are tense.
Yeah, things are tense. They have not sorted out why they got divorced. Eben goes to John Reese's house. The dogs are brutally murdered, and John and his wife, Allie, are extremely fucked up about it reasonably. And they're like, not only is this horrible, this is our livelihood. This is how we live up here. These dogs are our, like, how we, this is our job. So this person killed every dog we have. So Eben's trying to be like, oh, did you have a fight with anyone recently? And John's like, well, not a slaughter all your dogs kind of fight. Like, what kind of fight would it have to be, you know? He says, no, I wouldn't be targeted for this. This is insane. So now he was like, okay, great. So there is perhaps a new element in town. And he or she might be murdering all the dogs, you know?
Okay. Something to keep an eye on.
Back at the station, we see Eben show up, and he chats with Helen. It turns out Helen is his grandmother. And then the other guy working in the station is a 15-year-old named Jake, who is Eben's brother. And so it's kind of a family affair up at the police station here.
Sure.
And we find out that Helen grows weed for her cancer, which is illegal at the time. But she's like, please don't narc on me. I needed it for chemo for my nausea. So, like, grow up, you know? And Eben obviously is a very rules guy. So he's like, I'll let it slide because you're my ailing grandmother. But, right. You know, unfortunately, there is a part of America that, like, would have happily thrown that woman in jail in the past.
100%.
And probably will still win now, unfortunately. Yes. Allison, another call comes in. There's been an act of vandalism at the Utilidor. And I was like, what is a Utilidor?
Yeah, is that... That's a word I've literally never heard before.
Well, apparently it's a real word. And it is short for utility corridor. And basically it's a utility facility, if you will. So it could have anything in there. Fiber optic cables. It could be for TV or phones. In this case, it is for all of the utilities for the town. So it's like garbage. Okay. They don't have Wi-Fi at the time, I imagine. But you know what I mean? Any telephones. So it's like anything that's being run is being run out of this utility building. And they say it's very common in cold climates because things can't be buried. Because of the, like, below the frost line. So then all the utilities have to be above ground, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Who knew? So he goes over to the Utilidor, and we all learned a new word today, so that's nice.
That's fun.
And we meet Carter and Wilson. Carter is the guy who works at the Utilidor, and Wilson is the helicopter pilot that flies in and out of town. And Carter tells Eben, I was running the trash compactor. So it's basically just like one of those like spiraling metal like claws that like you throw anything in there, gets crunched up and shoved down.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of TikTok videos where people throw things at them. And,
yes,
you know,
it is really satisfying like that. And then also just like pressing down on something until it kind of like implodes and then explodes. And
yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of good machinery TikTok for, you know.
Absolutely.
Whatever you want to call that corner of the internet.
Crush and destroy. I'm not sure. Unfortunately, he says, I was running this. When I looked down and I realized what was in it, he shows him it is Wilson's headset from his helicopter. But then Wilson says, somebody came to my helicopter and ripped out essentially half the mechanism and threw it in the garbage over here.
Okay,
they're trying to destroy it.
So that the helicopter is not flyable.
Exactly. So the only other way out right now is the helicopter, and it is not operable. Obviously, again, a cause for concern for Eben.
I would be worried.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Stella arrives at the airfield. Of course, it is simply too late. The last plane out of Barrow has left, so she is trapped here for a month, right? Eben tells Helen, can we call Point Hope and Wainwright, which is like the next town? They're like 80 miles away through the snow, and we can't really get there. But are they having anything weird? Is this like, is it just us? Like, is something happening that we should know about? But meanwhile, Billy offers to let Stella stay with him and his wife, Peggy, and the girls. But he's like, you can stay with us for a month, but the charge is you have to tell us why you and Eben broke up. Can never win in town. It's like, well, they were the dream couple. They were the hottest people here. Of course they were going to end up together. Why did you break
up? Also, information, incredible currency.
Yeah. We also see here Eben, reference the tribe. And our understanding is that Carter's wife and some other indigenous people live outside town. Mm-hmm. So he's like, oh, you should have your wife come in during the month and we could like hang out or whatever. And Carter's like, yeah, you know, I mean, she'll come when she's ready, you know. But I obviously, everyone in this town who are seeing their livelihoods affected over the course of this day also know there's no way to repair any of this for another month.
Right.
Right?
Aye.
Yeah, exactly. We then go over to the satellite cell phone station. So there is a cell phone station. It's specifically for satellite phones. That makes sense. The lights go out, and Gus, the operator, realizes, well, that's not fucking good. Cell phone station can't
really
go down.
Nope. Really bad.
Allison, he sees a figure outside, and as it begins to snow, so he makes a tremendous mistake. Mm. He grabs a flashlight, and he goes out into the darkness, where there's a fucking blizzard starting. And we hear sort of this shrieking, this animal groaning. And suddenly Gus is surrounded by people and he is attacked by one of them who tears his throat out.
You hate to see it.
You hate to see it, ladies and gentlemen. Meanwhile, in town, you know, everyone ends up at the diner. There's one diner. We see the man, the stranger, who wandered into town earlier. He comes up and says to the waitress, you know, I'd like to drink. And she says, we actually don't serve during the month, which is, I think, true at one point. I don't know if it's still true. But if you already own it, you could drink it. And he says, instead of a drink, I'd like to get a bowl of raw hamburger. She says, well, obviously we don't do that here.
That's like, not...
Bitch, this is a diner. Like, what are you talking about?
Can't give you raw hamburger.
And the stranger grabs Lucy's hand and says, if you don't bring me what I want to eat, what I want to drink. Luckily, Eben has just walked in and says, hey, how about we go outside and talk? I don't know you. You're the first time I'm seeing you on a day when everything is falling to shit. It's hard for me to not assume that it's you, bitch.
Yes, like, you feel very guilty.
The stranger immediately gets in Eben's face. He's like, what's wrong with a man who wants a little refreshment? Oh, also, Ben Foster's doing an insane Southern accent, which I love. It has, like, disgusting teeth. And Eben says, we're just going to go outside. And the stranger jumps up and says, I'd like to see you try to get me outside. And in classic, I think, movies in the 2000s way, you hear the click of a gun being pressed against the back of the stranger's head. It is, of course, Stella standing behind him. Alerted, watching him be aggressive with Eben. Eben's like, the fire department gave you a gun? She's like, it's Alaska. Everyone has a gun. What are you talking about? Eben handcuffs a stranger and sort of while he's doing it, talks to Stella. And he's like, yes, I obviously missed my flight. I'm going to stay with Peggy and Billy. But whatever. And of course, the idea that like, there's still something there. There's a little bit of spark there. Eben hauls the guy out and Stella says, well, maybe I'll come say hi to Jake and Helen. Not you, but I'll come to the station, say hi. Of course, once Eben gets to the station, she's like, okay, so you fucked up the helicopter. You probably killed those dogs. Like, so what's going on, you know? And Stella then stops by to say hi to Helen and Jake, who love her and are, like, excited to see that she's trapped in town with them for a month. Meanwhile, outside town, there's a pipeline. And so there's a townie, Denise, who's inviting these two pipeline workers, Aaron and Gabe, back to her place. And the implication is that they were all going to fuck. And I'm like, listen, you got 30 days a night. What are you going to do, not have a threesome?
I mean, that's kind of like the thing to do.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Gabe is pulled into the darkness by an unseen figure, and he is throat is torn out. You better believe it.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, 30 days of night. I would say 25 throats, and we're losing them constantly.
Pretty quick.
So finally, at the station, Eben, you know, talks to the stranger. They have one cell there, so the stranger is in the cell, and he says, okay, so you weren't on the flight because I checked the docket and you didn't drive in because that's impossible right now. And you certainly didn't walk 80 miles from the next town. So what the fuck?
How the hell did you get here?
Yeah. Unfortunately, he doesn't have time to hear the stranger's answer because, as Helen notes, the computers have gone down and the phones.
Oh, no.
And the stranger then says, and again, in the text, he's like, Mr. and Mrs. Sheriff. So sweet. Got no idea what's coming to him.
Like, okay. That accent work.
And he says,
bar the windows. Try to hide. They're coming. This time they're going to take me with them. Honor me for all that I have done.
And he even says, who are they? Yeah, what do you mean they're coming for you to reward you? Allison, slowly, as they look out the window, all the lights in Barrow start to go out. Allison, at that point, what would you do? What would you do?
What would you do?
I'm going to barricade myself into a basement with enough food for 30 days and a gun and hope to God that, like, no one bothers me.
Yeah, that's really the only option you have because it does, like, it obviously depends on the vampire, but there's few vampires that can, like, pass through concrete.
Yeah, they
you know
are.
What I mean, they do have to find a door.
Yeah, I think that they still, like, operate like people.
Yes.
In terms of, like, matter.
Yes.
Like,
absolutely.
They live on this plane with us somehow. So, yeah, I think I would definitely just be like, you're all on your own. I'm going to go take anything I need to survive and like truly hide and hope to
disappear.
God that like
do everything
wherever I am doesn't have anything that they need.
Absolutely. And what do you think they need, Allison, if you had to guess?
Probably like throats and blood.
Blood. They're gonna need some. They're gonna need about 30 days of blood. So let's
see how much do they need a day? Like, what's the?
I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna flag this now. I will say it is unclear what the what kind of vampire we're dealing with. I also don't. We'll discuss again. I don't really think I understood their plan like from the beginning.
Oh, okay,
and I was
great.
Like, well, we'll get into that. Eben's like, okay, great. The fucking cell tower is down. So, like, we have no reception. So, he's driving out of the cell tower. Unfortunately, we already know Gus is dead. So, we know he's going to find there. And he tells Jake, Stella, and Helen, stay at the station. Watch this stranger. And he actually handcuffs the stranger to the bars.
Okay.
Just to make sure. So, he arrives at the cell phone station. Unfortunately, it is, of course, totally dark. And the door is standing wide open in a blizzard. And
not
Allison,
great.
He finds Gus's severed head speared on the top of a pole.
No.
Eben flips out and drives back to town. And he uses like the sort of, what do you call it, like intercom? Or like he's making announcements from the top
like
of his truck.
Like a megaphone type.
Yeah. And he's telling everyone, go get inside.
Yeah.
You know, if get inside your home. If you don't have power, come to the diner because the diner has a generator. Like, do not be alone. If you have guns, get them. And like you said, hold yourself up because something fucking bad is happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we see some families go over to the diner with their kids. Because there are kids in this town, you know? And so it's like, they're just like loose little kids. I was like, oh boy, that's not gonna be good.
No, it doesn't feel good.
Over at Allie and John Reese's place, Allie is pleading for John, like, just eat some food. But it's like, well, all his dogs were murdered. I can understand having an appetite for a minute, you know? But as she's cooking, Allison, suddenly a body flies through the kitchen window, spraying glass all over her.
Jesus Christ.
Allie screams, and the person stands up, grabs her, and John runs in to see a man dragging his wife out the window.
Oh, yes. This is in the trailer.
And then under the house.
Yeah. Getting dragged is an underratedly scary thing.
Agreed, because she's frantically clawing at the window pane. There's glass in her hand. She's screaming.
And you
there's
know you're not
blood
going
everywhere.
Anywhere good.
No, you're never
They're not
dragged.
Dragging you to like a Sephora. Like
exactly. You're not being dragged from one part of the cruise to another.
No.
So unfortunately, you know, she has been taken under the helm. Meanwhile, back at the station, Jake, Helen, Stella are playing. I couldn't tell if it was Risk or Monopoly, but some game where they have little plastic pieces. And the stranger's just talking to them, like, just be like, there's no way out now. You could feel it. You could feel that, huh? That's death approaching. And they're all like, oh, my God.
What the fuck, bro?
And Jake, who's 15, like, throws one of the plastic pieces at him. And he kind of falls outside the cell. And the stranger said, I'm going to take that plastic. And I'm going to pick the lock. And he's able to sort of like grab for it right as Jake runs over.
Okay.
And when Jake tries to pick up the little plastic piece, the stranger grabs him through the bars and holds him.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, Eben busts in and shoots the stranger in the shoulder. And finally, he's like, let's get down to fucking brass tacks. Who are you and what did you do to Gus? Because I absolutely knew you're doing all this stuff and I know you killed Gus. So I know that you're a murderer. And the stranger says, you're already dead. You're all already dead, and I don't talk to dead man. It's like, oh, my God, dude.
Like, not helping.
And he's like, well, I hope that we don't die, because if we die, you'll be trapped in the cell for at least 30 days. You're dead, bitch.
Yep.
So he's not getting – the stranger's not providing any helpful information. And Eben decides he and Billy, his co-officer, are going to basically systematically search through the town, right? Because he's like, if this guy keeps referencing they, there must be other people here we don't know that are doing all this shit. They're coming. Okay, let's go fucking find them.
Who are they and where are they?
Yeah, we're not going to wait for them to fuck up our town. I want to go out and find them. Which I'm like, that's what other option do you have? Let's go meet them.
That's all there is.
Stella insists on going. There's a lot of like, I'm going with you. You can't. Well, I'm going to. I love you still, you know. We're two hard-headed lovers, and we will fall in love by the end of the movie.
We are the hottest people here, and we are destined to be together because of that.
Right. So they get into their truck and they're driving only for Eben to see something on the road. They both make a huge mistake. They stop the truck. They get out of the truck.
Don't get out.
And they leave the doors open. But I guess maybe it's better to run in.
I guess.
And Stella uses her binoculars to see a distance. And of course, when she uses them, she stops and goes, get in the fucking truck. And they run back into the truck. Allison, what they're looking at is one of them running and leaping on top of the truck. And starts trying to punch through the roof of the truck as the truck drives frantically back to town.
And they're just chilling on the roof in motion?
Screaming. Yeah, clinging to the roof. But yeah, I don't know what the game plan is other than I'm going to punch the roof and kill Eben and Stella.
And like, do vampires have like...
super strength?
Yeah. Like, what do they have going on?
In this situation...
I know there's like kind of some variations on vampires. Like what...
Yes, great
question.
What's
their deal?
So in this case, they have super strength.
Okay.
They drink blood.
Yeah, of course.
And they cannot be exposed to UV rays. Okay. Other than that, I don't know much about them. Okay. They kind of have like a very classic vampire like
vibe.
Black leather S&M. Ooh. You know, like great hair, great skin. Yeah. Huge. Their teeth are, I think, an interesting take on it. We're sort of like they're like a jagged like shark mouth almost.
Shark
so not
mouth.
Just the classic shark fangs, teeth. But like a and to match their disgusting filthy old nails, right?
Well, the filthy old nails. It seems a little incongruous to the elegance of vampires that I normally associate. Like I think of vampires as like super clean, well kept, like very sharp.
And so the rest of them
the dirty
do look
nail
like that.
Is. You know, just an odd choice, but it was scary, so I guess it works.
I completely agree, and I feel like that, seeing that, it's like everyone has a great haircut, yeah. Everyone has like a nice coat, good skin, yeah. And then shark teeth, disgusting, filthy nails. But yeah, like,
okay.
One woman's wearing like, a vampire woman's just wearing like a sleeveless shift dress, so I guess they don't get cold.
Okay.
They have coats on, I suppose, for the look, but some of the vampires are short sleeves, no sleeves, so... And that seems nice. I mean, it makes sense why you'd be able to go here. It's like this cold wouldn't bother you. You can't be killed, I suppose. Yeah. But looking very chic, all kind of coordinated with one another, which I do assume they talked about. Like, so what are we wearing? How are we doing this? While they're frantically driving, Stella's driving, Eben shoots up into the roof of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And the person on the roof shrieks. And then it's Stella stops the truck. Short and a classic movie move, and the person flies out. And I think that's the first time they see them and realize they don't use the word vampire until later.
Okay.
But I'm gonna say vampire. This is a vampire. He's not a regular
guy.
This
isn't just a guy.
He's got crazy teeth. You know, he's being crazy. So they're like, okay, so that's a vampire. That's what we're dealing with, right? They speed back to town. There's a truck overturned, consumed into flames. We don't even hear about what happened with that.
Oh, that's just kind of scenery.
Yeah, so chaos is just coming to town, and over the radio, we hear Helen sobbing and screaming.
Oh.
Allison, when they get back to the station, they find blood sprayed all over the walls.
No.
And the cell door open. Helen is gone, but the stranger's still there, and he looks so disappointed.
Okay, well, that is weird.
And he says, they didn't take me. They didn't give me my reward. It's like, oh, yeah, the vampires tricked you, you stupid bitch.
Yeah. You're not one of them.
Yeah, he's supposed to be. Well, it's like in Dracula. What was his little friend that helped him?
Oh, yeah.
Dracula's
little buddy.
Little buddy. Let's see. Renfield. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
So that did pull it up. Thank you, Google. Thank you, Google, for coming through. But yeah, so I think he's in Renfield, because he can go out in daylight. He was preparing the town. But then it's like, why would a vampire reward you? They got you, bitch. You already did all the work.
Yeah, they don't. What?
Yeah,
they're keeping you around until they run out of other blood.
Also, Jake is gone, and he refuses to tell them what happened to Jake.
Okay.
So Eben basically is like, oh, I'm ready to kill this guy. And the stranger says to Eben, finish me off. I should just die. I'm not going to get my reward. And Eben's really tempted, but Stella's like, hey, it's still kind of early to be just shooting people in a jail cell, so we'll leave him locked up here. That's fine. Meanwhile, we then finally see a group of the vampires together. Up until now, we'd only seen the vampires through the lens of our characters, and I thought that was a lot scarier.
Yeah.
And then we see them together. I'm like, it's like a
hang.
AA meeting or something. Yeah, it's just sort of like, okay.
It's like, all right.
But
Like, I don't want to go to that bar. Like,
right, exactly, yeah. Right, this is one big polycule. They probably are. I can't imagine. At that point, once you're together for hundreds of years, you got to imagine everyone hooked up with everybody.
Yeah, I assume it's just, like, swapping back and forth partners.
So they got that going for them. And we see them talking to each other in a croaking foreign language. I'm going to try... It was not a real language. It was developed with the help of a New Zealand linguist, which is interesting.
That's cool.
And also, they shot this in New Zealand, which I also thought was interesting. It's not shot in Alaska or Canada, which I think now everything's shot in Canada. Yeah, so I'm like, well, maybe there was like some deal with New Zealand.
Yeah.
And again, it could have fooled me, you know. But yeah, so they're speaking in this sort of like whispering, hissing, like vampire language. That I guess we're to believe is like so ancient, you know, it's not Transylvanian.
Like predates all, yeah.
Yeah. And so obviously they took the ship that grounded itself in ice, sort of like, you know, the Dracula taking the ship to England. Mm-hmm. We just had that movie come out, which we did not... The Voyage, what the fuck was that called? The Voyage of the, all right. Well, this is nothing. Thank you, Google.
Well, back to normal.
Dracula's ship. All right, great. Last Voyage of the Demeter. So they were on their own voyage heading to a town, fortunately, that they were hoping would be perfect for them. It is because it's
yeah, this is like made for them.
Exactly. And so the head vampire tells the rest of his vampire polycule, don't turn them. You must decapitate them. Because you don't want more vampires, I guess. In this movie, you don't want more vampires. Other vampires constantly want to turn people, but...
Okay, and, so they're trying to keep it kind of like, we're the only vampires. We're just looking for food.
Yes.
We're not looking for new friends.
Yes, we're just feeding them.
They're not here to make friends. They're just here to rip throats.
And he says, we should have come here ages ago. Over at the diner... We see Carter Wilson and Wilson's elderly dad, Isaac, along with Lucy, the waitress, and a handful of other people, including some kids, hold up because they have a generator or there's food, you know. One of the guys, Doug, says, you know, I shot one of them and I just kept shooting and it didn't stop them. But not everyone has interacted with the vampires yet. So Carter's like, that's not possible. Like, you must have misfired. No one could survive something like that. It turns out everyone's dog has been killed. This is what we find out. Every sled dog has been killed in the town.
Now, do Denise vampires, is that useful blood for them or is that kind of just...
I don't think so because it doesn't look like the dogs were drained or anything.
Okay, they're just dead so that there's no...
I think so. Okay. Yeah. Just so they...
And I'm sure that dogs would sense their vibe and get real riled up.
Absolutely. If we could sense it just seeing their haircuts and their great coats, I think we know.
Yeah.
Denise is there, and she's obviously shaken, says, they took Gabe, and then they took Aaron. So those two guys she was going to fuck, they both got taken by vampires. So that's too bad. And Jake finally tells them, they killed Helen, my grandma. So everyone is terrified, and everyone is, okay, so we're fucked. Like, there's a group of people straight up murdering everyone, and we're trapped here for 30 days.
Now, are the people trapped aware that they're vampires, or do they just think they're people...
This is, I think, we're just piecing it together.
Like
this
conversation. These aren't human. Okay.
Yes. Like, they'd be like, well, I shot them and they didn't die. And then the other people are like, well, that's not possible. So, like, they're going to try to noodle out.
Got it.
So, right now, I do think they think they're just like a maniac group of people, which is.
But some of the details are starting to be like, maybe that's more than that.
Exactly. We also see Adam, who's the fire chief, at home with his wife, Jean. Their house is just bum rushed by the vampires. They come in through every, you know, window and door. The husband shoots one of them point blank in the chest. It doesn't work. And we see the vampires murder them and start feeding on them. And they are all sort of screaming and throwing their heads back in this like bloody ecstasy. And after that, Allison, the vampires are off the fucking leash. They're literally dragging every other resident out of their house into the street. So it's like this very well done and cool overhead shot of, like, different vampires attacking people and then,
fun.
Like, blood spraying and staining the snow.
That's fun.
So it's like we're going down the street and just seeing people, like, you know, and then meanwhile people are shooting the vampires and there's blood coming out of the vampires, like,
but
out of their wounds.
But it's not killing them.
It's not killing them.
Interesting.
Now, one of them gets shot in the head and that would at least slow you down.
You'd think.
But so then I'm like, you'd think at least let's start with, we'll shoot him in the head and we'll go from there. Right. I wanted a little more like, what's the plan with that? But
yeah.
Either way, it's mayhem and there's no escape. So everyone who is like in their home, you know, is basically going to be dragged in the street and their throats ripped out and then have the vampire scream in excitement at this guy. Eben arrives at the diner and shuts off the light so the vampires don't find them. Sorry. And sees Jake because he didn't know Jake had survived and the vampires had taken him. And everyone's like, okay, great, Eben's here. So what the fuck are we all going to do? Mm-hmm. And he says there's only one thing you can do. We have to find a safe place to hide, get enough supplies, and we have to hole up for 30 days. There's no other way we're getting out of here. We will die. Like, if we walked out of town, we'll just freeze to death.
Right. Yeah. So, 80 miles is far enough that, like, even if you had, like, a snowmobile, that wouldn't really be a sustainable path out. And it would also just be, like, one person. Yeah.
And obviously, it's beautiful. Like, if you grew up there, you just get – everything's normal to you.
Right.
But there is something about that where it's like, yeah, I it would be hard not to be near other things. Not in case of vampire attack, but just in general.
It's just, like, 80 miles is a long distance for if you need anything from another area.
Yeah. So they're all kind of like brainstorming like where to go. And Dee says, I think Carl Kelso's attic is a good place. It's basically built into like the ceiling so you can't tell it's there. It's really big. There's enough room for all of us. And I think Carl is out of town. So, and Eben's like, great, let's just go there. We put Carter from the Utilidor. He's at the lead. He's like leading the pack. He says, you guys go on and we're going to sort of like bring up the rear, right? Mm-hmm. And we see Eben and Selig go. They get bear traps. They get a bunch of different, you know, accoutrements. Unfortunately, when they're driving through town to meet the other group with their accoutrements, a group of vampires attacks their truck and lifts it off the ground and it flips it over.
No.
So now the truck's out of commission and they can't get their stuff out of it. And they're being attacked by vampires, Allison.
I mean, I will say, like, they're efficient.
Yes.
The vampires.
And we'll get into the end of this because at this point I'm just like, well, so what happens when you eat everybody? There aren't that many people in town.
Right. Yeah. There's only like 100 some people and there's a group of you. I don't know.
Also, what happens? Like, people will eventually, if people, after a month, people will come back and then they'll find out that what you did.
Right.
So what's the plan then?
Right. When 300 people show, I mean, I guess like, if they're super, like, if they, I don't know. I don't know what their end game is.
And it never becomes clear.
Oh, good.
So don't even worry about it. Fortunately, Eben and Stella obviously are terrified, but luckily Bo, the town snowplow driver, is still out and about. So he slams his snowplow into the gang of vampires, squishes them against a wall, doesn't kill them, but at least gives Eben and Stella enough time to jump in his snowplow, and they drive over to Charlie Kelso's to go hide in the attic. They get there. Luckily, Carter and the rest of the people get there, and they're safe. So that's it. They're going to hole up in this attic for 30 fucking days, right?
And this is still the first night?
Is the first night, Allison.
I mean, that's a long month.
It's a long goddamn month. So there's like a great shot of the town, which is like things are on fire. There's just like blood everywhere, and you just hear a woman screaming in the distance.
Also, blood everywhere, like wasteful.
Well, that's the other thing.
It's like if that's like, what you're drinking, if that's what you need—
Yeah.
Just, like, blowing people's heads, like just, I don't know.
Yes, it's like, either I could see, you know, oh, we use one person at a time, and we're going to, for 30 days, we're going to drain these people and leave. Yeah. I see that.
That makes sense.
I also see, we're going to attack this town in an orgy of violence, and then we're going to leave. I see that, too.
But
yeah. What they're doing, and then they end up staying for, like, 30 days.
Yeah,
so that's what I don't understand.
That doesn't quite...
Right. How much blood do they need? They obviously love the killing, but the drinking.
Right. And if you kill everybody at the top, I don't know if it stays good for a month.
Well, maybe because it's cold.
Maybe because it's cold. Yeah. And it's like also like then you don't get to do any killing. And then like then what are you guys up to for 30 days? Just hanging out?
Just hanging out.
Just hanging out.
They must be so tired of each other.
So
up in the attic, Jake says, I saw these people eat my grandma. They're like vampires. He's like, I'm gonna say they're vampires. Yeah. And Stella says that's not possible. Vampires don't exist. And it's like, bitch, you saw what appeared to be four or five normal people physically grab your truck in the air and flip it.
Yeah, it's just not
whatever word you want to use, they have some sort of supernatural power.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're people, they're just people eating people. Yeah. Okay, we don't have to use labels. And then Eben gives them a pep talk where he's like, you know, we know this town better than them and we could survive the cold. And it's like, well, they're undead, so I think that they can be fine with
that. Yeah, they've got a leg up on you there.
Meanwhile, back at the station, the stranger is still handcuffed in the cell. So he was got left there.
Really, and that's curious to find out what this guy's whole deal is.
Well, you won't, so I'm sorry.
What?
The vampires arrive, and one of the head vampire kneels down and says, we will take care of you for all you've done for us. Here's your reward. To the stranger. Yeah. He takes care of him all right. He just fucking rips his head off his shoulder.
Yeah.
You knew that was going to happen. Bitch, you're so stupid. Yeah. Don't help a vampire.
That's on you. Egg on your That's decapitated on you. Face.
That's on you. In the attic, we see Stella's talking to Eben, and she says, you know, I guess it's good you didn't want kids. Imagine what the situation we'd be in if we did. So I think that's the thing. I think we're going to think that they broke up because Eben did not want children.
Okay. Well, I'm available.
Listen, but also we're going to be in the attic for 30 days, so let's go to these fucking boots a-knocking. Outside, they hear glass breaking, and they realize, oh, it's the Clark's place. It's the house sort of like on the same block. And they start to be like, Doug and Lucy are the first to panic. Like, so they're on the block. They're going through everyone's house. We have to move. We have to keep moving. Like, I don't, they're going to eventually find us. Yeah. Even though some people are like, no, we're quiet up here. They won't. It's like, also, we don't know if they could smell humans. We don't know anything else about them.
Yeah, right.
And I also don't know the answer to that having seen the film. I don't think they can or they would have smelled people by now.
Yeah.
But so Eben says, we're staying here. We're rationing our food, and when the time is right, we will go to the general store, get more supplies, and then go to the Utilidor, which is outside town. And we can kind of, that's more of a fortress. We could shut down. Yes. But at least right now, if they're right on our ass, we're going to hunker down here. Mm. Allison, on the screen, day 7. So a weekend.
Wow.
Allison, they look out the window, because there's like a little attic window. Mm-hmm. They can see what's going on. They see Kirsten, a woman with a broken, bloody hand, walking down the street screaming for help. Carter, of course, says, we have to go help her. She's out there alone. But Eben says, that's bait. They're using her for bait.
Yeah.
And he points out, as she walks down the street, there's a bunch of vampires standing essentially on the roofs watching her.
Yeah.
And so, like, we can't do that.
That's and tough.
Kirsten, reaches the end of the street and the vampires surround her. She's like, no, I did what you said. Please, God, And the head vampire says, God? No, God. And kills her. Eben's not made of stone, though. So it's like, he did go outside. You're like, well, maybe I could. But then he's watching them. Literally goes outside, just sees them eat this woman. He's like, well, yeah, that wasn't really going to help. Unfortunately, Allison, when he goes outside, he stops and he sees John Reese under his house. We know that John's been down there probably for around about a week, which probably means he's not a person anymore.
I wouldn't think so.
Unfortunately, Eben doesn't know that. And it is dark. So it's like, for us, it's like, okay, he's obviously vampirized. Like, you can see he got pointy teeth. And I think we're to think that he was injured, like his wife either scratched him or bit him while he was trying to rescue her. So he did turn. Yeah. So he has not been killed. But that's even worse then. Because it's like, well, at least he was killed, he could fucking die. And another one. So not knowing this, Eben goes to help John to try to get him out, realizes the vampire, and ends up in a fight with John where he has to cut off John's head with an axe.
Oh!
I hate to do that to a neighbor.
That feels like it's already an unpleasant task, but then like it's also very physical.
Absolutely. And just blood sprayed everywhere.
Aye.
And I think it's like that is the moment where we would decide, okay, in order to kill these vampires, we will be cutting off their head. There's no formal decision made.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It seems like it's working, so let's like at least follow that to its end.
So Eben goes back up to the attic and realizes that he has lost his inhaler, which to me, as somebody who uses an inhaler, as an emergency inhaler, the idea of being in this situation and also you've lost your inhaler.
No.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no. Mm. Allison, they all go to sleep for the night. In the night, Wilson's dad, Isaac, who has been sort of, you know, he's been like, talk to your mother, ask your mother, I want you to know who your mother is. His mother has passed away, you know. So the implication is Alzheimer's, or maybe he's like sort of experiencing this because of the stress of the situation. Mm-hmm. He gets up in the middle of the night when everyone's asleep and he opens the attic door and starts to walk down. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm going to walk to Wainwright. Again, Wainwright being like 80 miles away. No, you're not. Fortunately, Stella and Wilson are able to grab Isaac once he's downstairs and he's sobbing. And then they finally addressed the bathroom issue, which is where I was like, where are you shitting in the attic?
Where are you pooping and peeing?
So I don't know if this is like a regular toilet or like some sort of toilet where you know the water's going to freeze. So basically they have a toilet, like don't flush. We can manually open the valve to let it out, right? So do not flush the water. Okay. Also, there'll be a sound.
Right.
So you could use the toilet, but then you have to manually release some part of the toilet. So they let this guy who is clearly very confused into the bathroom with a lock. He immediately locks the door, of course. And, his son starts pounding on the door like, dad, dad, dad. And they finally get it open. Isaac has escaped out the window.
Okay.
Stella tries to stop Wilson from going. He's like, he is my father. I have to go get him, even if he's wandering outside with a bunch of vampires. And he sort of like pushes Stella away from him and she falls and hits her head. I think just as a way to like, that she wouldn't immediately stop him. Like there's just, so we had to create some sort of a kerfuffle. Eben hears them talking downstairs and he runs downstairs and he grabs Stella right as a vampire enters the house through the window. And fortunately, the vampire didn't see them. Instead, they hear Wilson outside calling, dad, dad. So the vampire that has entered goes back outside to eat Wilson and his father.
Yeah.
And of course, Wilson and his father are dragged away into the snow and to their doom.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Stella and Eden even return to the attic. And Eben says, you know, it's hard to stop when your family is at stake. I understand him going after his father. The lengths you go to save your own. And Stella says, we were like that once, weren't we? No time to fall in love again, you two, because there's a vampire in the fucking roof.
Of course there is.
Running around like a goddamn asshole.
They're keeping eyes on you guys.
So he tells them, look, a blizzard's coming in. We can see the squalls start to blow. That's actually the perfect time. So if we want to move, which I think we should move because now the vampires are literally in the house.
That is
like
smart.
It's a matter of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So under the cover of the blizzard, we are going to try to move to the Utilidor. It's safe. We could barricade it. It's like a more of a, it's a proper setup for this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Plus it has supplies. They're going to stop at the general store on the way there. Mm-hmm. And Eben gives them all assignments, you know, like
you get
Carter, you're going to get batteries. Lucy, you're going to get canned goods. So everybody, we're here for 2 minutes. He's able to get an inhaler for the pharmacy as well. So I'm like, grab antibiotics, like get anything from the pharmacy.
Load up.
Yeah. Unfortunately, while they're all gathering, they freeze and they hear a man sobbing at the back of the store. And they turn and see it's a little girl eating a person. And she turns to them, and this is where I'm like, okay, we're getting a little, because they've been playing it really dead serious, you know? And she's like, I'm done with this one. Want to play with me now?
Oh, yeah, now it's like a hole.
Yeah. The little girl attacks them, and Jake is forced to decapitate her.
Not great.
And Denise says, wait, does anyone recognize this little girl? And no one does. Allison, they look outside. The blizzard has ended, which means they're now stuck here. Which is fine because it's a pharmacy.
Yeah.
But they didn't make it to the Utilidor. So we're going to hole up here day 18.
Worst places to be stuck.
100%. Honestly, a huge upgrade.
Huge.
Right. So they're there, and finally, there's going to be like bad weather again. It's like, okay.
So was that little girl like someone who came with kind of the group, or was she?
I think
turned?
That's the implication because it's never addressed again.
Oh, good.
So I think it was their child, of a vampire child that was brought
okay.
with them.
Okay. Well, at some point, someone's going to have a child.
Right. Well, that's a good point. So it's day 18, and they're waiting to go. And Carter says, okay, I'm going to say it. You know, we could get to the Utilidor if someone was willing to create a distraction. So one of us decides how maybe we could lead them astray, and the rest of us could run to the Utilidor.
It's like, yes, in theory, but.
Yeah. And they're trying to brainstorm how to do this. And Stella's like, well, you know, Grandma Helen had that, like, grow light in her house, like a UV light to grow weed, because you can't just, like, get it, you know. We're in Alaska, so in a small town. It's like, what if we lured them to her house and then hit them with the UV light? Bo's like, we don't know what these are. Just because it's in a Dracula movie doesn't mean it's going to happen, and those people are going to be willing to die.
Yeah.
But honestly, they're like, well, what's the other option here?
Yeah, it's
you know,
like
they're
going to
come
the end of the
find
road.
Us. Yeah. So Eben, because he is a stand-up guy, he and Jake insists on going. Eben, of course, argues with him because he's a teenager. But Jake says, fuck you, I'm going. So they run outside screaming and drawing attention to them. And they run to Helen's house. They're able to start her generator because they need the light. And the other ones as soon as they get moving, the vampires attack the other group, leaving the pharmacy. They rip Doug's throat out immediately. So the gang has to run and hide in the sheriff's office. The vamps descend on Grandma Helen's house just as they get her UV light. And the vampires come through the front door, and the first person through is a female vampire. Mm-hmm. They hit her with the UV light. It fucking works, Allison.
Okay.
She is charred and falls screaming into the snow. And the head vamp comes to her. She's like half burned. And he says, you know what I have to do? And she says, yes. And he tears her throat out. So I think it was a mercy killing.
Okay.
And Bo says,
I like that
Stella,
they have a code.
Absolutely.
Within their crew.
Bo says to Stella, I appreciate what Eben and Jake did. Now it's my turn. I have to help them because the vampires are still around Helen's house. So he goes to Malachi's Thresher and he starts driving the Thresher through the town in a great, this is a great scene because it's Bo, this old crotchety snowplow guy, driving this gigantic piece of snowplow equipment. He's driving through town, running over vampires, firing his shotgun at them, ramming him with the Thresher part. And then this is what doesn't make sense. He then crashes in the machine into a building for seemingly no reason.
Oh.
And I thought that was so funny where it's like, you could have made him lose control. He just plows into a building because he wanted to.
All right.
And as the vamps descend on him, he's shooting them, and then he runs out of bullets. And he tells the vampires as they start crawling into the, he sort of is hiding in this building he's run into. They start crawling in the windows. He says, you're not going to get me. And he lights a flare. He has a big box of them. He lights a flare and he drops it into the box of flares and the building explodes. Unfortunately, Bo does not die. He is blown free. And now all the vampires are showing up around him. And the head vampire says to him, because the head vampire could speak their vampire language, but also could speak English.
Helpful.
And he says to Bo, when a man meets a force he cannot destroy, he must destroy himself. It's like, that seems like that doesn't apply to this.
That's not.
Like, you're about to kill
really
me, you're a vampire.
Is, but sure.
Eben sort of staggers over to the sheriff's office, and he and Stella embrace. Thank God we both survived it. And also, this is where I saw she takes down her hood and she has this insane blonde. Yeah. Like Marilyn fucking Monroe blonde. It looks incredible on her. But I was like, this is impossible. She would do highlights. Yeah. She'd be able to grow it out for a couple of months. You know what I mean? And she says, we're down to six people. And Carter turns around and says, soon there'll be five. Mm. And Carter turns. He's turning. And they're like, what happened? He's like, the little girl of the store bit me when we were sort of wrestling her to the ground so Jake could decapitate her. And he's turning.
Okay.
But it's taking a minute, so he's still human. And he's like, Eben, I didn't want to tell you before, but the reason my wife didn't come visit is that she and the kids, they were hit by a drunk driver. Mm-hmm. And he didn't say when, but I'm assuming recently they died. And he says,
they're waiting for me. I can't live forever. I can't. Don't let me.
And Stella's like, no, don't do this. And it's like, but there's literally no other option, and that's the right thing to do. Like, yeah, you know you're turning into a Dracula.
That's gonna kill other people. Like,
things are not doing well.
Get it over with now.
Yeah. And Eben takes Carter into the office, closes the door in the sheriff's office, and you hear him chop his head off, and then you hear the head hit the ground. Allison, Eben emerges, and I finally have to ask you at this point in the podcast, Allison, who will survive?
Who will survive?
So we got Eben, Stella, Lucy, Jake, and Denise.
I think Eben and Stella will make it and perhaps carry on a new relationship in the post-vampire world.
I like it. I like it.
I think we still have like at least one or two more deaths from our core crew, so...
Now, keep in mind, Jake is a teenager, if that helps you at all.
Okay, so maybe Jake survives and the other two die.
Yeah. Great. I actually didn't see another day thing, and I went back and was trying to figure out when it passed, but time has passed, so I'm going to say it's day 21, right? So this is like, we're on the third week of the month, and then we're at the sheriff's office. Right. We're holed up. As they look outside, we see them sort of flashing a flashlight through the window to try to signal if anyone else is around. And they see a flashlight responding from another attic. And Jake says, that's Billy's house, the other officer. And they're like, oh my God, Billy or somebody in his family is still alive. This is the saddest part of the movie, girl. Even Stella, like, oh, if Billy's alive, we should get him and bring the family. They could be with us. It's just safer. They go to the house and Billy is out of his mind and it sort of like becomes sort of like grown out beard, you know, sort of Howard Hughes situation. And they see in the master bedroom in bed are three bodies, his wife and the two kids. And he has clearly shot them all through the head.
Oh, God. And so he says sad.
He's like, I know. He's like, I couldn't let them get to them. I know I couldn't let it happen. And even like yells at him. He's like, you never hurt your family. Never. And it's like, I agree.
Yes.
But also, you got to give him, cut him a little slack. This is a situation where.
This is beyond like.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a police officer and sometimes bad things happen. Like, this is so outside of things you should have to, like, mentally prepare for in life.
Right. That being said, I will never do that if God blesses
but
me.
But I do
wife,
want someone to do it to me.
At the same time. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, maybe you have to flip a coin and decide who gets to die.
Yeah.
And he says, I tried to kill myself last, but I ran out of bullets.
Oh,
so that's why I've just been here.
Oh, that's awful. Their bodies. That's so sad.
I know. They grab Billy, take him back to the sheriff's office. By the time they get back, everyone else is gone. So Lucy, Jake, and Denise are gone from the sheriff's office. Okay. So they have to pray that they took the opportunity. They just went to the utilidor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're like, we have to pray because there's no evidence of vampires in here. So they must have moved on. They had an opportunity. So let's go to the utilidor. Mm-hmm. I think this is just a way to get them separated again.
Yeah.
But that's fine. So they're trying to make their way out. Of course, the vampires are in the streets and there just aren't that many living people anymore. So Stella, even and Billy take the opportunity to also start crawling under the houses. So I don't know. This might be true. I'm not sure. Probably it would be because you probably can't dig a basement.
If it's frozen. Yeah.
If it's frozen. So there's space underneath each house. They're sort of crawling. And then we see a girl, a human girl, one of the girls from town, little girl named Gail Robbins. And Stella, again, Stella, that mothering instinct that she didn't get to fulfill with Eben. She sees Gail walking on the street and rescues her. But of course, the girl is bait. So one of the vampires, instead of attacking Stella and Gail, starts trailing Stella. Because smartly, the vampire's like, oh, she's going to meet up with the rest of them, and then we'll be able to kill all of them.
Mm-hmm. All right.
They're not wrong. So Stella and Gail are separated. Eben and Billy get to the utilidor. Fortunately, everyone else has made it. But they're missing Stella and Gail, which obviously Eben is terrified. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, okay, great. I saw the woman I'm clearly in love with, and now a vampire is probably eating her as we speak. We then see the head vampire give a monologue where he's like, gah, 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 gah. Like, I can't do the voice, obviously, but it's essentially that. And he says to them, we worked for centuries, during which we were only bad dreams. Destroy them all. And I was like, so this was the plan? You worked for centuries. So you just...
For like 70 people?
Right. Like, well, you guys should have thought more about that. You commissioned a boat. You could have gone anywhere.
It feels so short-sighted.
It didn't make any goddamn sense. When he said, I was like, huh, okay, well, you know.
I guess, guy.
So we see Billy at the utilidor. He's losing his mind, obviously, because he shot and murdered his whole family. And he crawls up into like this industrial attic space to hide, I think, sort of. But of course, a vampire has watched them arrive at the utilidor, and the vampire is close behind. Everyone else gets together, try to batten down the hatches, sort of create sort of a command center for themselves, and even tries to call Stella on his walkie-talkie, which they had picked up at this sheriff's office. She's not replying. So last time we saw her, she had a walkie-talkie. She's not picking up.
All right.
Billy calls for the others, and everyone's sort of like, oh, where's Billy? Where is he? And as he calls them, they hear him being torn apart by a vampire in the distance. And they run to him, I mean, which I thought was nice. I'm like, I would be running the other way at this point. Yes. You know, you see what's happening. And he is wrestling with the vampire in front of the grinder. And his arm gets pushed into the grinder and his arm is ripped off. Fortunately, Eben is able to throw the attacking vampire into the grinder as well, which is very satisfying. Yeah. But Billy screams because he's been bitten. And he starts to turn. And being the good friend and diligent coworker he is, Eben has to get his axe. and cut off Billy's head.
Yeah.
And this is, to me, one of the best kills, the moment of gore in the movie, because it is a long, very good one. A very methodical chopping, blood spraying all over Evan's face and eyes. And then I'm like, wait, if you get into your mouth or eyes, do you turn?
Yeah, I guess I still, we will end this movie with me still having a ton of questions about logistics, but sure.
So Denise finds within, like, you know, the utility store, she finds chocolate, vitamins, and vodka. And she's like, we might as well just fucking party until the end of the month, which brings us to day 29, Allison. They're still at the utility door, and Denise tells us one day until sunrise. So they've really made it, the ones who made it.
I'm impressed.
Very impressed, but they still haven't heard from Stella. But the walkie-talkie crackles to life finally, and it's Stella. She says she and Gail are alive, and they're making their way to the utility door. But unfortunately, they are very close within spitting distance of the utility door, but the vampires suddenly showed up and are in the street. So she and Gail are alive but underneath a car wreck and are basically starting to freeze to death. So if you guys could figure that out, like what to do. But there's like a mass of vampires. This is not something we've run into before. And also if they were to find out Stella and Gail were there, obviously they would kill them as well. But luckily, even he is our hero. He tells Stella over the walkie-talkie, I'm coming to get you. And tomorrow we're going to watch the sunrise together. Allison, as they look through the window, the streets start filling with oil. The vampires have sabotaged the pipeline.
Okay. Was that a plan?
Well, apparently, because we see the head vampire light a match and toss it.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, they want to smoke everyone else out. But then I was like, oh, no, they actually want to burn the town down. But why? And also, why? That's a huge, that will isn't tip that people off.
Where they live now?
Exactly. And I was like, even if somebody—
Are they headed somewhere else next?
I don't know. Like, it's, that's where I started to be like, okay, so I guess I don't know really understand. I didn't understand what their plan. But either way—
No, I guess not.
And our gang is fucked either way, you know? And so Evan says he's going to go try to rescue Stella and Gail, even if he has to, like, go up against these vampires.
Yeah.
And because basically it's like, if I don't get them, either the vampires will get them or they've set this on fire so they will burn. So that, like, I have to go, you know? And Jake tries to tell him, like, if you go out there, they will also come find all this.
Mm-hmm.
But Evan's got a plan, Allison. Here's what the plan is. Because I was one of those things where I'm like, okay, I mean, you're in a between a rock and a hard place. Evan withdraws blood from Billy's severed head, which, again, he died at least over a week ago.
And would you still have blood?
I guess you would be thinking it would be congealed. It wouldn't be liquid anymore, right? It would be like a jelly.
Clotted?
Yeah, it would clot. It would start to dehydrate, I imagine. Anywho, in this movie, he's able to take—
He still has liquid blood.
Blood and injects himself with it. And he tells them John and Carter, they were both bitten and they stayed human for a while. I think if I go up against them as a vampire, I will be able to defeat them.
And then what? You kill him?
I guess so. Everyone, of course, freaks out at this idea, but Evan's already doing it. Yeah, he's like shaking and collapsing. When he wakes up, he goes, I can smell your blood. And if I'm everyone else, I'm like, okay, so you're just going to kill us right now?
Right. Like, how are we supposed to feel safe through this plan?
How many minutes do you think you're going to be in control of being a vampire?
Right. 10? Yeah, it's not something that you're just like, I'm willing myself to not.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Allison, he walks out that front door to be a hero. And this is where I'm like, okay, it is hard to write a movie. I'm not saying that. Even meets the vampires in the middle of the town as the town burns around them. So basically, he's confronted in the middle of the street. It's him versus like 12 vampires, and he starts kicking the head vampire's ass. And in classic movie moment, none of the other vampires run over to help. But I was like, if it was him versus 12 of them at once, it would be over. But and the guy's still a vampire, so he's able to like, grab Evan's head and just start smashing it into a car hood.
Aren't they both like undead now?
Exactly. Like if anything, it's just Evan for whatever, and then eventually he'll become a vampire, and like ostensibly you would join them. Also, Stella and baby Gail are looking from under the car, watching the love of her life, her ex-husband, getting his ass handed to him by a vampire as the town burns down. And he yells to them, go. And she and Gail are able to run to the Utilidor. And luckily their brawl is enough of a distraction. So he and the head vampire are duking it out, bare knuckle boxing, and the head vampire is kicking his ass because he's been a vampire longer. He knows his strength.
Sure. Yeah, he knows what's going on.
And just when you think the head vampire will be victorious, the stupidest thing I've seen in a movie in a long time happens.
Oh.
The head vampire runs at Eben, who throws a punch that goes straight into the head vampire's mouth and through the back of his head.
I'm sorry.
Not as sorry as I was, because it also looks, the special effects are also bad.
Okay.
And when the rest of the vampires see this, they look and they realize the first light of dawn is peeking through the clouds.
Uh-oh.
They must leave. And we don't even see them leave.
Where?
And so he even says, should we go find them?
No, but maybe.
But also, like, so they got out of their ship and they left?
Like,
Stella comes out of the Utilidor and says to Eben, what did you do to yourself? And he says, what I had to do. Bitch, no, you didn't.
Huh?
Like, dawn was 45 minutes away. And I understand Stella and Gail were not doing well. I'm sympathetic to that. But, like, once they ran inside, you could run inside. Or you could leave or I do anything. Like, it's just like, he tells her, it's almost dawn. We made it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Stella starts to cry because he is now a vampire and injected himself with vampire blood. So, as we see, there are other villagers emerging from their home, which, by the way, is being burned down as they speak. Stella takes Eben up to the cliff over the town to watch the dawn. And they kiss goodbye. And as she holds him, the light's rays hit him. And Eben burns like a charcoal briquette, turning into ash. And he screams as Stella holds him to her chest. The end.
Huh.
Ha. That was my take on it.
Ha.
Huh. Ha. Also, when I saw that punch go in that vampire's mouth, I thought, let's
wrap.
Yeah, let's go ahead and
wrap. End it somehow.
Let's go ahead and wrap this one up.
Let's wrap that up right up.
I still enjoyed it, but it was a little, it was unfortunate.
It's like, all right, we lost some logic here at the end and didn't quite land the plane.
Also, what are some fatal mistakes you think were made in 30 Days of Night?
Fatal mistakes.
I'm impressed they all survived as long as they did.
Absolutely.
I would say that the town should have more than just, like, dogs and one helicopter as options to get out during the 30 days of no flights.
Yeah.
Like, I do feel like, even if it's only, like, 150 people that stick around, like, if something happens, like, they do need options. Though I guess if there was a second helicopter, like, they would have just ruined that, too, or something. So, I don't know.
Yeah. No,
but everybody
did
a good job. And, I mean, in the end, like, I mean, I guess it worked, but, like, I don't understand how the transitioning into a vampire became, like, a useful tool for,
you know,
for beating them.
You know, I guess you're in a really high-pressure situation, so who are we to judge?
But you just make a decision.
Yeah, it was really, I think, really a swing and a miss, if you had to ask me. And, still enjoyed it. And then where would you put 30 Days a Night on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I think that this is a 5. It's kind of right down the middle of, like, there's scary stuff, there's gory stuff. It's also taking place with, like, vampires, which we all know aren't real, which brings it down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, you know, the constant nightfall is a great horror location situation to put people in. And I do think kind of the, like, not knowing the rules does make it, like, a complicated movie. Like, it does make the, how do we know if we can go outside if they won't find us? Like, that stuff.
Yeah.
All kind of scary. So, yeah, I think a 5 for me. What about you?
I'm going to give it a 4 because I do agree, like, the initial setup and all that stuff's happening. And I thought Ben Foster's weird Renfield character was really, like, fun and very affecting because it was, like, you know, just talk about how they're all going to die. And then, by the end, it's like, okay. And I think I may have, it's like, I almost needed to know either less about the vampires. Like, I would rather prefer the vampires are almost like wolves, like more animalistic.
Mm-hmm.
or then they're fully or fleshed out characters. Out. Exactly. Yes. Like, we're either getting more or less, but the amount we have, I'm just like, where are you from? Where did you get those clothes? What was the plan? What happens when you meet everyone? Why do you bring them to town?
How long have you been alive? Are you alive?
Yeah.
Where did you meet your
Renfield? Yeah. And I, again, still enjoyed it. And it was really, I'd be interested in reading the comic book version of it, which maybe gets into more of this.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
But yeah, there were certain things I'm like, well, all right. I guess I'll take your word for it.
I guess.
All right. And then finally, before, I guess we've arrived at the end.
We have arrived at the end.
Sunlight is peeking over the bluffs, Allison. I am turning into ash as we speak.
Oh, yes.
And until next time, guys, please.
Please. Keep it spooky.
Don't forget to follow us at Ruin Podcast and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for show updates. And if you're just as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okaladi.